It is a delight to be here today, and even more than I could imagine, I'm so grateful that we have 15 minutes and not 10, which was what I was initially thinking we had, and I was practicing my auctioneer voice, so you'll be spared that this morning. The reason this says May 2009 is that that is when the Federal Highway Administration, the American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials, and National Cooperative Highway Research Program, we live in a land of acronyms in transportation, that is when the international scan was actually done. And the international scan program is a very broad-based program. They look at a variety of different transportation initiatives, including transportation demand management, hot pour asphalt, just anything, bridges, anything you can imagine. So it had been more than 15 years since the last scan had been done on bicycling and walking. And the first scan that was done was actually, they chose the best, the very, very best communities around the world. And to some extent, they were so far ahead of where the U.S. was that that was quite problematic. Oops, I'm sorry, I should go back. I have no relationships to disclose. I do work from a home office, so I have some relationships, but none that relate to this program. I am a recovering lawyer, and so I take policy matters very, very seriously. And we learned in introduction to how to present voir dire or jury selection and how to make opening statements that you always took the Baptist minister approach. So you told people what you were going to tell them, you told them, and then you reminded them of what you'd already told them. So here you are. This is, and this presentation was actually put together, I should mention right at the outset, by our report writer, Sean Turner from the Texas Transportation Institute. And Sean did a fantastic job of really researching everything for us from start to finish. So we're going to be talking a little bit today about general findings. And those findings then will give some sense to you about the essential findings then that do relate to the E's. And we often talk about the three E's of education, engineering, and enforcement. But there's also encouragement and evaluation. So then we'll get to the recommendations. The objectives of the scan tour were multifold. And I would have actually liked to have added another one, but I was kind of the lone policy person on the team. We wanted to learn how to improve pedestrian safety and mobility, and we wanted to look at all levels. We also looked at safe routes to school programs, but interestingly, we found that in many ways our program is more based in law, and theirs is based in practice. So there wasn't a lot that they had to tell us about safe routes to school programs in the countries we visited because it was just done. That's what they had been doing for quite some time. We also looked at one of the concepts that Jamie raised in her presentation about monitoring usage level and exposure. And we know that what gets counted counts. And right now, we don't really count pedestrian and bicycle use for transportation. And we were curious to know what kinds of safety research and evaluation these folks had done. So we chose, after quite an extensive review of the literature and an interview process, talking with the leading thinkers in the field, we looked at a number of countries to visit, and we chose the ones that were the most similar to the U.S., that they had a car culture, and they were sort of on the upswing to a better place. In each of the countries, we visited two cities. And I would just point out that Bristol in the United Kingdom was operating a program that was very similar to our non-motorized transportation pilot program, which is a program for $25 million going to four communities to see if we can shift mode share. So that was a particularly interesting situation. Overall, we're going to be looking a bit at the policies that relate to those five E's I mentioned earlier. And you are beginning probably to see a theme in these presentations about the kinds of considerations that are important to look at when we think about health and transportation. And that has to do, obviously, with urban and land use policy. But it's something that, unfortunately, really hasn't been done in a lot of communities. So we saw excellent examples of leading edge thinking in this field. We also saw a lot of political support at all of the levels, not just the staff, but you saw the leadership in each of these countries that we visited. The elected officials were very much on board, and they were modeling the good behavior that we would like to also model in the U.S. So get your mayors on board and do exactly what Jamie suggested. Share with them those recommendations and take them on a walk or on a bike tour of your community. We noticed that obviously gas tax is much higher in the countries we visited, and that certainly is a factor. So I'll just skim through the rest of these so that I can certainly get to the recommendation. I think the most important thing to keep in mind is that this document bears the insignia of the U.S. Department of Transportation. And its first recommendation, which we worked very, very hard to make sure that we kept in the report, was that the highest priority should be given to pedestrians and bicyclists in the road user hierarchy. This is a phenomenal concept, and it's something that if you go to Vancouver, British Columbia, you will see it. The planner will tell you that that's what they do. We saw either in law or in practice that was what all of the other countries did. So here is just an example of what you might see if you looked at many, many cities, not just the ones that we visited in Europe and some of the cities that are considered to be more cutting edge right now. But there was really quite a bit more car use after a great period of bicycling and walking. So we wanted to make sure that we were going to be doing, looking at practices that were not so dramatically different that we could squeak them through in terms of policy. And I'd like to give you just one example of what's possible with concerted thinking over time. And this is Winterthur's pedestrian zone, but it wasn't always such. And they actually started and they moved progressed nicely to create an area where pedestrians would have priority. This is an example of what we might have seen in Copenhagen, and to my way of thinking, the automobiles serve as border collies for the pedestrians, making sure that they stay to the side in their proper location. And here you see that pedestrians, when given freedom, are able to smile at other people. They're able to engage in commercial ventures, which we love. We love to make sure that people have their coffee and are well-behaved and all of that. So we also like to think about public space. And the use of public space is really enormously interesting if you're a public space wonk like I am. You will see that over the last 50 years, we've essentially given over our public space to automobiles. And Bern, Switzerland was no different. But they have now, in modern day, they have created a very playful space for the people to interact. There's a concept of private space, public space, and third space. The public space is actually your employment space, where you spend most of your time, or your school if that's where you are. And then the third place is really the public space that gives us an opportunity to interact with people of all ages, income levels, and demographics so that we really can be a whole community. I'd also just like to, go back just a moment and note that a colleague of ours, Michael Ronkin, makes the point that having surface parking lots in your downtown is a bit like having a toilet in your living room. The more people who are biking and walking, the more people see them and expect to look for them. We often hear when a pedestrian or a cyclist is hit and killed, that the answer is that the motorist didn't see them. And that is good enough to get them pretty much absolved of any personal responsibility. And so what we see as more and more people bike and walk is we see a greater awareness. We looked at engineering measures, and I was one of only four non-engineers on this trip, so I'll do my best to interpret for you some of this engineering language. Essentially, these techniques will give priority to pedestrians, and that's what we were trying to do. We looked at a variety of techniques, some of which you see here. You see crossing islands, raised crosswalks. You're beginning to see them in some cities in the U.S., intersection safety here, these are examples of giving priority again to the bicyclists so that they can move forward ahead of traffic. There are some topics that need a bit more survey, a bit more study, and this includes cycle tracks, which we saw in Copenhagen, and cycle paths, which we saw in Switzerland. Some of the no-brainers that are low-hanging fruit that we can do right away is just simply using paint on roadways to guide bicyclists through lanes. We're beginning to see the use of colored pavement in many cities in the U.S. to guide people through especially difficult intersections. It's quite charming to see that they have low speed zones or family zones, sometimes they're called, where children can be expected to play in the street, and it's expected that you'll be watching for them. This is where we have public markets, and so there are a number of factors that I won't go into about why that works, but it's something to consider for, I think, economic development. We didn't see a lot of enforcement, but we did see photo enforcement, and that was an interesting tool. We saw a lot of education and a lot better integrated branded campaigns instead of this campaign of the month that you often see on safety, and people spend a lot of money and it has almost no impact. I should go back for just a moment. The green space is actually a practice area where children are able to practice their bicycling and walking skills in essentially a mini city, and it's really quite wonderful. Encouragement is critical. It's something that a lot of our members do through Bike to Work Day and Walk to Work Day. So there are many ways that we can get to encouragement. Better integration with public transit is critical. We're doing a better job of that, but in many cities we're still limiting access times so that you can't bring your bike on during peak time. Evaluation is critical. Again, here are some examples of how you can count on a systematic way, basis the number of bicyclists. So we're beginning to see some implementation recommendations now, and I'll again go through them quickly, but the most important one is probably this policy to give pedestrians and bicyclists the highest priority in the road user hierarchy. This report, by the way, is available at www.apbp.org, and it will link you to the location of the report online. We also felt that there should be a way to have a systematic counting of bicyclists and pedestrians. We identified a number of engineering practices that could be immediately deployed, that low-hanging fruit that could be done now. You don't have to change manuals or do too much different in order to make these things happen. But we did recommend that there were some other things that would be really helpful if we took a look at them and studied them. When I first learned to drive, I'm 56 years old, and when I first learned to drive, all of the traffic signals were near side. And then I didn't drive for a very long time, and by near side I mean I stop at the white stop bar, the light is here. If I go into the intersection, I no longer see my light, so I don't know what it says, so I have to stay behind the light. Then I did not drive for a long time, and then when I began to drive again, suddenly all of the signals in the U.S. had been moved across the intersection. So now they're actually something you aim for. So you try to race through the intersection on reds, yellows, and reds, unfortunately, and that's a huge issue. Bike boxes are something that will be coming into great acceptance more and more. We also recommended, again, the evaluation of that lower speed zone. As a former local elected official, probably the most common complaint I had from constituents was about speeding, that people are just going too fast in the neighborhood, and often it was the neighbors and sometimes even the people themselves who were complaining. And I'm a recovering speeder. I've had to really work very hard to, when I do drive, to drive at the speed limit, at or below the speed limit, and I'm about the only one doing so. We want to develop or implement better practices for transit, integration of transit and bicycling and walking. And probably the critical piece that is, again, fairly easy is to educate people. And we saw in the UK particularly these children's traffic clubs where children were able to, at a very early age, understand what was expected of them, what were their responsibilities. In the U.S., we view driving as a right and not a privilege, and we very seldom test in a really meaningful way people's knowledge of traffic law. We're recommending a better way to do safety campaigns through the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And Diane Weigel, who was also one of the non-engineers on the trip, is in charge of the division that works on bicycling, walking, and safe routes to school. We're suggesting looking at photo enforcement, and lastly, just simply to develop better programs that would encourage more people to bike and walk. This is the SCAN team, and what we really need now is we need more champions. We need people to learn about the recommendations that were made and help to implement them. And I appreciate your time and interest. Thank you. Okay.
Don't worry about your presentation.
All right, I was going to go back to the beginning. Yes, let's start here.
I was curious what you found in your scan on right turn on red policy.
Brilliant question. In many of the... Oh, yes, thank you. What did we see related to right turn on red? We saw policies of no right turn on red. In many of the, I can't speak to all of the countries and cities, but we did see firsthand experience. We were able to go out and walk and bike many of the cities, and in fact, all of them except for London. So that helped us see exactly firsthand how things were working, and red light, no turn on red was critical, and it was one of the things that it was sort of a sub-recommendation that didn't make it to the top 10. Mm-hmm. In the blue shirt.
What's the contact information to get access to these reports and
recommendations? www.apbp.org.
Can you repeat that?
Yes, apbp.org. So Apple, Paul, Bicycle, Paul. Yes?
I don't remember if I didn't miss it and taking it out there or not, but there's recommendations around street width, and if you talk about people speeding, and I'm thinking of the road behavior, and one of the factors why people speed is regardless of the posting, everyone drives fast with the road sign. Did you say something on that, or do you have something on
the engineering recommendations, I think, are perhaps not as specific on that point as they could be, but we know that in many European cities there is a constrained right-of-way because those cities were built before the automobile existed. And we know that a skinnier street tends to improve compliance with posted speed. People will typically drive as fast as they can possibly maneuver their automobiles. The new highway capacity manual, which is either just out or coming out, will now recommend skinnier lane widths, which is really critical. Good question. All the way in the back.
Thank you very much for that. I'm Lindsay Davis, I'm the president of the UK's Bicycle Public Health, and I am a faculty. I've been hugely enthusiastic about getting people biking and walking. But I was interested in your phrase of integrating.
Yes. Essentially, how do we make bicyclists behave, I think would be the answer or the question. And indeed, we noticed that immediately. Our recovery day after travel was in Copenhagen, and we noticed incredible compliance with red lights. And I think the reason for that was that, again, people learned traffic laws. They were reinforced throughout their lives. People just simply, there was peer pressure to comply with the law.